Welcome to Farmed and Dangerous, a long-term memory radio series on the pharmaceutical industry in Canada. In this hour, we feature three grassroots Canadian advocates for consumers' rights in the area of prescription drugs. Two are from Quebec, and one is from Ontario. They are John Kinlock of Project Genesis and Phil Nolan of the NDG Community Coalition on Healthcare, both in Montreal, and Ethel Mead of the Ontario Coalition of Senior Citizens Organizations in Toronto. I'm speaking with John Kinlock of Project Genesis. What is Project Genesis?
Project Genesis is a community organization in Côte-des-Neiges, which is a part of Montreal, since the late 70s, where it was founded to respond to the problem of Jewish poverty in that area of Montreal. It has since evolved into an organization that responds to the needs of the entire population, the population of Côte-des-Neiges being very diverse. It's become even more diverse over the years. And Genesis works on issues that affect the people who live in the neighborhood, specifically housing, welfare, access to healthcare, access to government services in general.
So zeroing in on healthcare, what kinds of initiatives do you take or have you taken in the area of prescription drugs?
Well, we've been concerned about the issue of prescription drugs since 1996. At that time, you know, there was a change in the law. Welfare recipients had paid nothing for medication. In fact, after that, things changed. And in fact, welfare recipients and seniors both found themselves in a situation where they had to pay where they previously had not. Well, the law came into effect in 1997.
So is Quebec unique in this respect?
Well, medication across Canada is a sort of a patchwork of different kind of programs. They vary from really bad to fairly good. And Quebec has compared to the rest of Canada, I would argue it has probably a little better than the rest of Canada, but we can do certainly a lot better. For example, when the law was brought into effect in 97, welfare recipients who were considered having severe measures of not being able to work in the workforce were still denied access to free medication. That was changed when they found that, in fact, people who had severe impediments to work, people who had mental health issues and things like that, were actually denying themselves access to medication so they could pay for food. But even those people had to fight for years to get that changed.
Was this the study done by Dr. Robin Tamlin?
Robin Tamlin, exactly. That report came out in 99, I guess it would be, which demonstrated that, in fact, people were denying themselves basic goods in order to pay for medication, and were, in fact, denying themselves medication, needed medication. So these people were ending up in hospitals. They were ending up costing the system much more. So it didn't make any sense at any level.
I understand there was a new law, Bill 98, that had an effect on medication insurance.
Absolutely. It was adopted in July of 2002. Bill 98 was something that we, in conjunction with lots of organizations, fought against because we didn't feel it responded to the needs of people who were on welfare and seniors. One thing we've been fighting for a long time now is that seniors have access to medication. And we've gone from a situation now in 1996 where a senior would pay as much as $100 a year to a senior now in 2003 will pay as much as $1,244. That's a huge increase. And certainly not all seniors will pay that amount, but it is possible for a senior to pay that much, which includes all the premiums, co-payments, all the various insurance premiums that people have to pay.
What would you have to say about the Romanow report that came out in the fall of 2002?
Well, we're very impressed with the Romanow report in lots of different ways. On the issue of medication insurance, it doesn't go as far as advocating a national pharmacare program, but it comes very close to doing that. Mr. Romanow does not shy away from talking about the fact that people, when they're in hospital, get access to all the drugs they need, that their doctors, their physicians feel they need. Once they're out of the hospital, they're responsible for paying for them, which doesn't make any sense. We have recognized that medication now in 2003 plays a very important role in healthcare. It has to be seen as part of the medical care system, and until recently that has not been the case. But Canadians are now paying more for medication than they pay for physician services, $13.8 billion versus the $12 billion for physician services. So this is a vital part of our healthcare system and should be recognized as such. We think ultimately a universal plan is the only way to go about dealing with this issue, one where every Canadian is covered from a first dollar payment. It makes a lot of sense financially. It makes a lot of sense ethically, I would argue. So this is something we really need to look at.
From your point of view, what is driving the costs of prescription medicine?
Oh, there are lots of different items. It's a very complex issue. It ranges from the practice of doctors, the prescription practices of doctors, to the practices of industry and research and development, and the role the government is playing in research. So, for example, just talking about the issue of doctors' prescription practices, doctors are under a lot of pressure from the industry, from the pharmaceutical industry, to distribute new drugs, new expensive drugs, which are not necessarily better drugs, but they're more expensive. There's also the expectations of patients. People go in there thinking, Oh, I saw this ad on American television the other day for this drug, this wonderful drug. I want access to it. Again, a situation where a drug may not be the best drug for you. There may be an older drug on the market that is far better for you. And these are all driving the cost. I can give you the example of Celebrex and Vioxx, which are two new drugs, which were very expensive. But it was an American study found that if they had been given another drug, an older drug, instead of these newer drugs, could have saved billions of dollars for the system and given the same results. Government is financing indirectly and directly research in terms of medication right now. And a lot of those things are not being done in a way that is healthy. They're being determined by industry. Industry has a lot of impact on what government chooses to research. And government is indirectly subsidizing the pharmaceutical industries, which are vastly profitable. So this is making a lot of money for our industry and taking a lot of money out of healthcare. I think we need to look at the whole issue of preventive medicine, looking at why we're taking as many drugs as we are. We've gone from a situation where there were very few drugs on the market 40, 50 years ago to one where now every year 80 new drugs come out. Of those 80 new drugs that come out, maybe two are considered to be revolutionary, and the rest are a mild improvement over what we had, or basically the same of what we had. But are these drugs really getting us what we really want?
Now, of course, Project Genesis serves the community of Côte des Neiges, but do you have any idea what's available to other parts of the city of Montreal in terms of prescription medication?
For prescription medication, there are not a lot of organizations that are working specifically on this issue. The Point St. Charles Clinic is working on it, for example. There's a coalition called the Coalition Solidarité Santé, which is made up of unions, community groups right across Quebec, which is working on this issue, which intervened on Romano, which intervened on Bill 98. Unfortunately, we weren't able to change Bill 98, but this battle is far from over. The factors that were addressed in Bill 98, the fact that the drug plan is costing us more and more every year, this is not going to go away with Bill 98. Bill 98 was brought into effect to try and stop these cost drivers, but they're going to find themselves in the same situation as they did last year, with a 15% increase in the cost of the plan and no possibility for stopping these increases. What they gave themselves with Bill 98 is the opportunity to change the law, to increase premiums without having to go to the National Assembly. They'll be doing this on a very quiet way, but the issues are not going to go away. The solvency of the program, the effectiveness of the drug plan, all these issues are going to come back again this spring.
Of course, pharmaceuticals are a major factor in the Quebec economy.
Yes, they are, but not as major as they're made out to be. We feel there's not enough evidence out there to justify the kind of rhetoric that comes out of Quebec City about how we have to foster the pharmaceutical industry, we have to adopt all these laws that are going to make it profitable for them to stay here. We feel that statistics show quite eloquently that Ontario, which doesn't offer any of the same kind of advantages to the Quebec companies, is doing it every bit as well, if not better. And that Quebec's fear of driving the pharmaceuticals out if they don't adopt laws that are favorable to their interests, these are unfounded. But unfortunately, it's very hard to find this out because information is just not very readily available. The Quebec government does not open its books and tell us, what do they give every year to the pharmaceutical industry? We just don't know these kind of things, for sure.
When you compare Ontario and Quebec and you say they're doing as well, what do you mean?
The general sort of prejudice that people have is that Quebec has the big pharmaceutical companies and Ontario has the generics. But if you look at the breakdown, it doesn't really look that way. In fact, the big pharmaceutical companies, the major international ones, are also present in Ontario. And in Ontario, the industry ministry has not felt it necessary to bend over backwards and offer all kinds of tax breaks to invite these corporations into the province. But in Quebec, and in Ottawa, the Bloc Québécois has been fighting quite strongly to maintain the patent registration, the patent gifts that they get from the Canadian government, and the Quebec government very strongly behind protection for pharmaceutical companies.
But it is true that on the Quebec formulary, there are more brand-name drugs than in any other province?
That's right. I mean, we have a situation now where there's been a generic Prozac drug available since 1996, but in Quebec it won't be available in 2004 because of patent protection we give here to Quebec. And this is costing a lot of money, and again, and not offering, we don't feel, it's not offering any justifiable advantage to Quebec in terms of jobs or anything like that.
What do you recommend for consumers, for individuals who are concerned about the price of drugs or access to drugs, access to information?
I think they can work on several levels. First of all, in terms of their own personal lives, if they're called upon to take medication by their physician, I think people need to ask questions. Is this the right kind of drug for me? Is this in terms of what I'm going to have to and might have to end up paying for it? Is this doctor asking me to buy a drug that's not on the formulary? Do I need that kind of situation? Politically, I think we also need to take a very strong and hard look at what we can do as citizens to change the laws that are basically giving pharmaceutical companies huge amounts of money that can be spent better elsewhere, which means getting in contact with your MNA or your MP, letting them know how you feel about this issue, and supporting political parties that have a platform that is favorable to a just policy on pharmaceuticals.
Is there anything else you'd like to mention?
And just that I think that we need to start questioning a lot of things that are going on around us. And I think healthcare is, we have a universal plan in Canada by definition, but often I don't think we exercise our roles as citizens to really make this a democratically run system, one where the healthcare system listens to the average citizen and we have an impact on it. We don't need a Romano to come along to tell us what we need. I think Canadian citizens know what they need, and they need to find ways to make this a more ongoing process than to have a royal commission every 10, 15 years.
And I would imagine it starts at the level of one's own doctor, one's own pharmacist.
Absolutely. You develop a relationship with your pharmacist and with your physician to make sure you feel comfortable to address these issues. In a situation where more and more drugs are available and doctors are under so much pressure to prescribe these drugs, you need to feel comfortable that your doctor is doing the best thing for you. And I'm not saying that there's any malice involved in doctors. I just think they're trying to do the best for the patient. They're getting all this propaganda from the pharmaceutical companies, which tells them this is the best way to do good for your patients. And as we know, doctors work very hard. They don't have the time to go back to school every spring and learn about these new drugs and what the side effects are. So that they listen to what comes out of the pharmaceutical companies. And that's a biased source of information, unfortunately. You hear rumblings out of the pharmaceutical industry that they're trying to find ways to make sure that this information they're handing out to doctors is more unbiased and more objective. But by the same token, I think given the resources that the pharmaceutical industry has and the drive they have to sell their product and the desire and the need in order to maintain their profits, it creates a conflict of interest at the very basic level. And so doctors and the public have to find a way to make sure that information is accurate. The Romano Commission is asking for the establishment of a National Drug Institute, basically, I think that's what they call it, which would look at right across Canada how drugs are being distributed, how they're being used, follow up on these kind of things. Because I went to a conference once where a doctor made a very good point. We give a prescription to somebody and we don't know what happens. We don't know if it's filled. We don't know how long they necessarily take the drug. Are they taking the drug properly? This kind of information is not out there. And this is the kind of thing we need to know to make sure that drugs are being used appropriately, both by the public and by the medical profession.
Chris, there comes around the issue of access to the physician himself or herself for that kind of follow-up.
Yeah, also, doctors and pharmacists need to be in better contact with one another. There needs to be better exchange at that level. That's been very rarely proved to me that there's not much of a relationship there other than writing out the prescription and handing it to the patient who goes to the pharmacist. But there's no communication between the pharmacist and the doctor themselves.
Would you agree that the pharmacist is one of the most underused resources in the chain?
Well, they are, and they've been asking for more power to actually have the right to intervene on this issue. And Romano actually recommended they be given some more powers in terms of their handing out medication, not to the level of a physician, but more than they have right now.
How about sources of information for individual consumers? You've already recommended that people talk to their MNAs and their ministers of parliament. Mm-hmm. Do you know of any sources online, for example?
Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, which is at policyalternatives.ca, has some excellent material on what's going on in this area with healthcare in general. The unions, major unions, the Canadian Labour Congress, the Canadian Health Coalition, healthcoalition.ca, has some excellent material. They did a lot of work around Romano. Magazines like This Magazine, Rabble.ca, all these kind of organizations are printing lots of stuff on healthcare these days. And it was very heartening to see the number of people who intervened on Romano on the issue of medication insurance and healthcare in general, unions, community groups, churches. A lot of organizations made representations to Romano to make sure that it was a very good document.
So what is Project Genesis going to be doing in the future in terms of prescription medication?
We're basically doing what we think we should be doing in general, which is since we work on healthcare, we've separated prescription drugs out of healthcare until recently. Now we're working more closely, bringing those two together. So we're working to make sure that when the Romano report is implemented, we want to make sure that happens. And this is something that's happening now. So people should be keeping an eye on the news to see what happens, because this could be it in terms of where our healthcare system is going and specifically where medication insurance, whether we're moving towards a national plan, whether we're moving towards cost control, whether we're moving towards better control of research and development. All these things are being decided as we speak.
We've been speaking with John Kinloch, community organizer with Project Genesis in Montreal. Thank you very much for your time today.
You're very welcome.
For health policy criticism in a Canadian context, the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives website is at www.policyalternatives.ca. That's www.policyalternatives.ca. Phil Nolan has been active as a Montreal-based advocate for public health care for 7 years. He's involved with the NDG Community Coalition on Healthcare. Welcome.
Nice to be here.
Just to begin with, how did the NDG Coalition on Healthcare get started?
In 1995, the provincial health ministry closed 7 hospitals in Montreal, and one of them was an NDG, so that a committee was formed to oppose the closure. In 1996, the hospital closed, but this committee decided to stay together. Basically, it was advocacy for NDG. They closed the hospital. We lost the emergency. It was really a difficult time for NDG. It was a wave of closures, I think not only in Montreal, but across the country. But the committee to oppose the closure stayed together, and we became a standing committee of the NDG Community Council. We basically speak for NDG regarding healthcare policy. We have maybe 5 or 6 member groups, and we're maybe a dozen people that meet once a month. We began to get concerned about access to medications in 1996 when the Parti Québécois introduced a new drug plan. The former drug plan provided free medication for people on welfare, and seniors had to pay $2 per prescription with a $100 annual ceiling. In 1996, the plan was changed, and people on welfare now pay $17 a month, which comes to about $200 a year. Seniors can pay co-insurance. They pay a premium. But someone with an income of $18,000 a year can pay up to $1,100 for their medication. So we were very concerned about the accessibility of essential medications. And we worked with other groups. There was the Coalition of Medication Insurance, which represents 177 groups across the province. And they organized to oppose the 96 drug plan. And we've worked with them. We've worked with the Coalition of Physicians for Social Justice also, who are very concerned about access to essential medications. Basically trying to remove any financial barrier to people getting the medication they need. And the coalition advocates a fully public drug plan, which would mean eliminating private insurance coverage for drugs and pooling all of everyone in a public plan to reduce risk. We've organized meetings around advocating a fully public drug plan, public meetings.
What has your activism taught you about the role of the pharmaceutical industry in providing access to medication?
Medication is a necessary and essential part of health care, but at the same time, it isn't considered as such by the Canada Health Act, which guarantees like access to hospital care, to doctor's care, but not medication. Medication is exceptional, but given that the undeniable reality of the importance of medication to the treatment of people, we believe this is an anomaly and that medication should be considered as essential and necessary because its particular status right now is comparable to cosmetic surgery. Really, legally, in the Canada Health Act, it has the same protection, which is none. So we advocate for consumers, and medication, you know, is essential to the treatment of sickness, but the Canada Health Act does not explicitly guarantee access to medication for everyone. So it's left up to basically to be dispensed in what's a more or less a market, like a normal market, like the same market where you'd buy shirts or widgets or whatever. But we believe that the status of medication is radically different and should be considered such. The pharmaceutical industry works in this market, but its market basically is sick people who are obviously are the most vulnerable members of society and require a certain amount of protection, which they're not presently getting. So this has been reinforced in us that there's something seriously wrong with status quo as it is.
What kinds of initiatives have you taken as a group to gain access to medication?
We presented a brief at the 2000 review of the 96 drug plan, a brief on genericization. Our relationship with the drug industry is we've advocated for the Canadian Drug Manufacturers Association, which is really the generic drug trade group. And we've worked with them to promote generic drugs because Quebec has a very particular situation as far as generic drugs are concerned. We use less than they do. In BC, it's about 50% of drugs dispensed are generic, whereas in Quebec, the latest figure I have is 35%. So generic drugs being on the average about 40% cheaper, we could save a lot of money by promoting generic drugs. But we also have a huge drug industry and pharmaceutical research industry in Quebec, which exercises pressure on the government to promote brand name drugs. So we're, as a result, we're actually subsidizing by promoting brand name drugs and not generic drugs, it serves as a huge subsidy to the pharmaceutical industry. So we worked with the Canadian Drug Manufacturers Association, Jim Keon and these people, and they have their own interests, you know, that they're promoting their pill pushers, you know, like the brand name drug industry. But we find that we have a common interest, and that is in having cheaper, more accessible medication, less of a financial barrier to essential medications. We presented a brief, like I said, in 2000 to then Health Minister Pauline Marois, the 2000 review of the 96 drug plan. We organized a public meeting on the question of a fully public drug plan. And the meeting was organized with the Coalition on Medication Insurance and Physicians for Social Justice. We had about 50 people out, a lot of media. At the time, the health ministry had commissioned a study of the feasibility of a fully public plan, which we thought was never really given, was never seriously considered. The committee, the Claude Bon-Marquette Committee, was basically a whitewash and just recommended supporting the status quo, which is untenable for us.
When you say a whitewash, what do you really mean?
Well, they didn't take the arguments for a fully public plan very seriously. They made assertions like that administrative costs in the private sector for private insurance for medication are marginal, are not an important part of the cost, and marketing is an important part that raises the cost of having a private provision of medication insurance. So they made these bald assertions that the administrative costs were much lower than research shows, but they never supported that. There were no notes. There was nothing. And then you got the usual cliches about the private sector being more efficient and government administration being unwieldy and immovable. And it's all cliches, and they showed no evidence for any of this. It was a long document. The actual discussion, the feasibility of a fully public plan was about two or three pages. They just didn't take it seriously.
What kind of reception do you get when you make representations to government?
In 2000, we went to Quebec City and presented a brief on genericization. We also talked about other ways that drug costs could be lowered. And we met with the health minister, Pauline Marois, who was health minister at that time. We were very concerned about under-medication, which meant that with the 96 drug plan, there was a study by McGill, a government-mandated study by McGill, that demonstrated that drug consumption was reduced because of the financial barriers that were imposed in 96. So that patients with diabetes, cardiovascular disease, epilepsy, asthma, were showing up in doctors' offices at twice the rate they were prior to the implementation of the 96 plan. And it was a very serious effect on, in particular, the mentally ill and their drug consumption. So we were very concerned about underconsumption of drugs. And we mentioned this to the minister. And her answer was to change the argument. And she said she was concerned about overconsumption, overprescribing. So that was the discussion we had. We were concerned about underconsumption, and she was concerned about overconsumption. And basically our 15 minutes with the minister were up. I think we managed to make our point. Basically, that costs for drugs are being passed on to the poorest members of society.
People who can't afford it don't get the medication.
They don't get it, and they end up in an emergency ward, or they end up in a doctor's office.
Has your group ever approached the pharmaceutical industry directly for any reason?
No. I've personally talked with the brand name drug lobby group, RX&D. We prepared a report on drug policy in Quebec, and we talked to all of the groups concerned to get their position so that we represented all positions fairly. But no. Our advocacy mostly is take our case to the federal government, provincial government.
What advice would you give to people thinking of getting active in advocating for themselves in the area of prescription drugs or in the area of health care?
Don't be intimidated. The system is, it's basically run by technocrats, and then you have your administrators, and you have your people who are elected. I think in the last 5 years, Quebec has had about 36 different health ministers. So they barely get up to speed by the time that they move on to another ministry. So basically, their understanding of the system, you can have a better understanding or be at least as informed as the health minister is, or you can be at least as informed, I think, with a very possible, feasible level of motivation and investment of time and energy as the president of the board of directors of a hospital, a comparable organization.
But how do you get started if you want to advocate for yourself? Or if a group wants to start advocacy around any issue connected with healthcare, how would they get started?
It helps to have a community that has a history of activism and has a certain level of organization. I work in Notre Dame de Grasse, NDG. I've been told by people at the Regional Health Board that NDG is probably one of the best organized boroughs in Montreal. And in our coalition, there's a lot of people with long history of activism. Practically, I would say, if you want to get involved, work with your community council or an advocacy group. I know in Côte des Neiges, there's the Federation CJA. There are Jewish charities, and there's Project Genesis. I guess your question, the assumption is, I'm assuming you're asking me about organizing to advocate. So it would help to have a community that had already done a lot of the work for you, which is what I kind of stumbled into this myself.
Could you just give us an idea what kind of support your group gets from the community, from the media, or from government agencies for your advocacy?
Okay, I think I mentioned that we're a standing committee of the community council. So we use their organization. We work with their community organizer and a community organizer at the CLSC, NDG Montreal West. And we meet at the CLSC. We've gotten grants. We got one from Bell Telephone. One of our members used to work for Bell, and Bell has a program for retired workers to get involved in community activism. There are other provincial bodies that give grants to groups like ours.
How do you see the future in terms of prescription drugs?
There's highs and lows for me. Sometimes I'm optimistic. Sometimes everything looks pretty dark. The Kirby report came out a few months ago, which was the Senate. They advocate extended public coverage for drugs, so that's encouraging. The Romano report came out. They advocate extending public coverage for catastrophic drug costs. And this is all very encouraging. Less encouraging is the fact that the Quebec drug plan, the 96 drug plan, is seen as a model for the other provinces. So some days I feel encouraged. I feel there's a viable way of guaranteeing access to medication and making medication more affordable and less expensive for the government without actually harming the population, which is what happens if you impose fees, and co-insurance and premiums on many people. But I think that it is feasible, and there's a lot of groups. A fully public plan is feasible, which would guarantee access to medication, which is the only guarantee, really. It's feasible, and a lot of groups support it. The Conseil de la Statue de la Femme, the Council of the Status of Women in Quebec, Solidarité Santé, a lot of advocacy groups. The potential is there, and I think that you can take some hope in that. When the Claude Moore-Marquette Committee was looking, the provincial government mandated committee was looking at the feasibility of a fully public drug plan, we organized a public meeting.
Anything else that you'd like to bring out having to do with your advocacy, with your membership in a grassroots organization, a group that has to relate to government, sometimes deal with heavy-duty government documents that are hard to wade through, complicated policies, as you say, change of personnel to the point where, anybody on the street is probably as well-informed as the Minister of Health, the particular linguistic and social climate of Quebec?
I have a certain amount of experience in lobbying or, as a consumer advocate, the different levels of government. At the federal level, usually you write a letter about, we were concerned about automatic injunctions, which is an extraordinary provision which allows brand name drug companies to get an injunction to stop the sale of a generic copy of a brand name drug for 2 years when the brand name drug company alleges a violation of its patent. So it doesn't have to prove that its patent is violated. It merely has to allege this. And this particular provision is being abused. And a lot of cheaper generic drugs are being kept off the market. So we write to the federal government, and they reassure us that everything's fine. We write to Brian Tobin and Alan Rock and Ann McLennan, and we get these letters back. We've dealt with this. It's all, you know, we're happy with the status quo. Don't worry. And they reassure us. And then in the U.S., there's a bill, a McCain-Schumer bill. I think it's called the Greater Access to Affordable Medications Bill, which has not been passed. It's not a law, but there was a bill to that effect, which wanted to stop this abuse of automatic injunctions because of basically the Canadian law is aping the American law, a law which we got at the time of free trade and a kind of solid agreement. So now the Canadian government sees the American government doing that, so now we have to review automatic injunctions. Suddenly, the status quo isn't fine anymore, and we should look at this. You could almost say, this is going to sound a bit ridiculous, but the best way of getting change at the federal level in the Canadian government is to write to the American government to do something, and then the Canadian government will ape whatever the American government is doing. So it's a kind of oblique way of approaching it. But in practical terms, that's our experience with the system to date that I can relate. You know, and our experience is to get these very reassuring letters back telling us not to be worried and everything is fine. And then the last letter we got was that a special committee has been formed to study automatic injunctions, which we got from our MP. And now we got cast as these left-wing fanatic extremist losers because we advocated a fully public drug plan. And now you have both the Romano and Kirby reports talking about expanding the public drug plan. So I would say any involvement, really, you have to get into it for the long run because all of these things move very slowly. But I would encourage people to get involved for the simple reason that you can have an effect over the long term. You know, you exploit whatever level of organization you can, and you'd be surprised at how broad of a coalition or an organization that you can actually get together. And the coalition, we meet monthly, and this is a real decent, great bunch of people. It's really a privilege to work with these people. So in my own experience is that you get involved, and it's a good experience. I don't think there's much to lose. For myself personally, I've been in a situation where I represent people. I speak for people. And this has had a kind of galvanizing effect. My own self-confidence has been much increased. So there's the level of your own personal involvement in something. And something eminently worthwhile like this, you can't regret it.
I find it interesting that you use the expression left-wing fanatic extremist losers. And the whole process goes so slowly that it's only in a group that one could feel that one has a chance to cause change.
As an individual, I'm sure you can affect change. But as a group, you organize and you're around and you have a history. And we've been able to apprise and inform our member of parliament and our member of the National Assembly. We wrote to our member of parliament about automatic injunctions. She had never heard of them. Her first impulse was to tell us that they don't exist. So just at that level of raising awareness of issues, you can have a lot of effect on people that are crucial to the process.
You've already said quite a lot about what motivates you. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we let you go?
Well, regarding the drug plan, I think there's a real urgency that people get involved and organize around the drug plan. Underconsumption or under medication is a very serious problem. I don't want to, you know, sound melodramatic, but if we are our brother's keeper, the drug plan is our poor relation. There has to be a certain minimum of social solidarity in any society, and I think that it's not there right now for people who have to choose between paying for their medication or buying a liter of milk or something. Single mothers on welfare with diabetes pay $200 a year for medication that a family could eat for a couple of weeks for that kind of money. At the same time, we're subsidizing the pharmaceutical industry through all kinds of ways. And we're subsidizing the most lucrative industry in the world. There's at least three ways. The fact that brand name drugs on the market has market exclusivity for 10 years. It has protection. Quebec, it's 5 years longer than right. in the rest of the country. The provincial formulary, which is a list of drugs that are covered by RAMQ, by the Régie d'assurance maladie du Québec, which is far more extensive than Ontario's, for the simple reason that it includes a lot more new drugs, and new drugs are uniformly more expensive. And many of these new drugs have little or no added therapeutic value over the cheaper, older versions. So Ontario doesn't include them. Here we include them. This acts as a subsidy to the brand name drug industry. So that's the provincial formulary. There's also BC, which seems to have a very informed drug policy. They have something called reference drug pricing, which is similar to replacing brand name drugs with generic drugs. But here you're replacing an expensive drug with not a copy, but with a similar drug. The estimate I heard from the Quebec government was that we could save $35 million a year, which through reference drug pricing. And $35 million is the annual budget of a 200-bed community hospital. So here we are subsidizing the brand name drug company again with money which could serve to open up hundreds of hospital beds, to allow people to be taken out of corridors of emergency rooms and be admitted for care. And then there's fiscal benefits for the drug industry. And the U.S. has terrific fiscal benefits for drug research. Drug companies doing research pay two times less tax than other industries. And the only better system fiscally for drug research is in Quebec, where drug companies can recoup 65% of their investment in fiscal benefits. And a lot of drug companies are doing research in Quebec hospitals, and they're not paying for the nurses, they're not paying for the doctors. And this is all coming out of the hospital budget, which everyone knows is hospitals are underfunded. So there's a myriad ways that the Quebec government has found to subsidize this industry. And this is all falls under the blanket of drug policy. And our coalition, we see drug policy as a whole, from the research to the manufacturing to the dispensation of drugs. So at a minimum, instead of subsidizing an industry where as a percentage of revenues, profits are twice those of banks, we should look very hard at eliminating any financial barriers to access to medication for people under the poverty line.
We've been speaking with Phil Nolan, Montreal-based advocate for public health care. He's involved with the NDG Community Coalition on Healthcare. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Judith.
Drug Policy in Quebec, a document prepared by the NDG Community Coalition on Healthcare, is available online at the NDG Community Council's Documentation Center at www.ndg.ca. That's www.ndg.ca. The Coalition of Physicians for Social Justice website is at www.coalitionmd.org. Again, www.coalitionmd.org.
And for more information on the underutilization of prescription drugs in Quebec, go to any good search engine and type in Coalition Medication Insurance Quebec. That's Coalition Medication Insurance Quebec.
By my window on a cold and cloudy day, when I saw the birds come rolling, oh, to take my mother away. Circle be unbroken, by and by, Lord, by and by. There's a better home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky.
Oh, I told her, yeah. Undertaker,
well, Undertaker, please. Please rise, Lord.
Michael Mead is co-chair of the Ontario Coalition of Senior Citizens Organizations, which is affiliated with 130 seniors groups in Ontario. She's also active in the Older Women's Network. You do a lot of advocacy for citizens and consumer rights around the issue of prescription medication. What are some of the issues that concern you?
Well, we are very much concerned about the long patents that pharmaceutical companies are able to get for anything that they say is new, even if it's only a slight modification of some other manufacturer's medication.
How is it that patents became a concern to senior citizens?
They became a concern as soon as they were increased from, I think it was 3 years to 20 years by the Mulroney government. Generics take much longer to get to the market, and generics are always very substantially cheaper.
So it's the cost of medications that turn out to be the result of these 20-year patents.
The 20-year patents are compounded by the fact that the patent holders go to court when their patent runs out and tangle up the generics for a year or two in injunctions and all kinds of legal maneuvering that they lose in the end, but they have gained 2 more years of exclusive control of that drug. We are actually waiting not only 20 years, but more like 22 years for most things to become available.
And, of course, most seniors are on fixed incomes.
Most seniors are on fixed incomes, absolutely. Some of them on very low incomes. Women who live on their own who are past 65, almost 50% of them are living on guaranteed income supplement. And that is a very small amount of money. It's about less than $1,000 a month.
So the generic drugs come much more slowly to the market?
That's right.
Has there been any response of any sort from any government agencies?
No, the government has not shown any sign of backing down on it, though we've made many representations to the Ministry of Industry.
Of course, it's hard to get the drug, and it's difficult to pay for it. Are there other concerns related to medications for seniors?
We don't know how much they're being over-medicated. There's no way for a layperson to know whether they are being given too many drugs or not. I think particularly about osteoporosis, which it seems 4 women out of 5 who are over 65 are getting medication for osteoporosis. But we have no research to tell us whether this has actually reduced the rate of fractures among seniors.
What do you notice among your peers in terms of osteoporosis?
Everybody I know is on a drug. Well, they're told it's to prevent having cracked bones.
It's considered to be a preventative measure.
It's considered to prevent deterioration of the bone, which is osteoporosis. Mm-hmm.
And of, say, the top 3 kinds of medications that older people are taking, cholesterol, anti-cholesterol drugs, hypertensive drugs, and osteoporosis drugs,
right.
How many of those do you think are necessary?
I don't know that. I only know that they're being given out at a great rate without a research on outcomes that would tell us whether this is good or not.
In your community and in the people who are active along with you in these various senior citizens organizations, what do you notice around over-medication or drug interactions? What are people saying?
People don't usually know when they're suffering from these things because it results in confusion. And people are confused. They don't understand what's happening to them. And if their doctors are alert to the fact that it might be interaction of medication, then they may look carefully at what they're being prescribed. But if they're not alert, they may think they're having senile dementia, vascular dementia, or even early Alzheimer's. Confused states are very, very frequently the result of drug interaction, but that is not always recognized.
Understand that your group, OXCO, the Ontario Coalition of Senior Citizens Organizations, has been courted and wooed by pharmaceutical companies offering conferences, materials, and money, etc. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, when a pharmaceutical company has a version of its own of any popular drug, they're very anxious to get it on the formulary. And we have had representations from Merck Frost about Fosamax, which is their version of an anti-osteoporosis drug, and Pfizer, which has been pushing their drug that's supposed to give some help to Alzheimer's patients. They both asked us innumerable times to lobby the government on behalf of their particular drugs. Of course, we will not do that for any specific drug. We do ask that new things be put on the formulary if they are working and are being prescribed for seniors, but we would never go to bat for any particular one of them.
What is the relationship between the visit to the specialist, the family doctor, the pharmacist, in the process of getting over-medicated?
Well, I think going to specialists is one of the ways in which you get drug interactions that people don't notice, because your family doctor knows what she or he has prescribed for you, but then she sends you off to a specialist who doesn't know all the things that you're taking and goes ahead and prescribes what he thinks is good for your particular condition, and you may go and fill the prescription and start taking it without asking questions about whether that mixes properly with the medication you're already on.
What frustrates you the most about the present situation in terms of prescription medication?
Well, I think it's the bottom line mentality of the government that frustrates us in every direction. They only seem able to think about budgets of particular departments. One department's budget has nothing to do with another's. They're all fighting for their own and all trying to reduce their own. And citizens bear the brunt of their efforts to, they think it's the most important thing in the world, to cut their budgets down so they can give tax cuts. For seniors, tax cuts are not at all important. We don't earn enough for tax cuts to mean anything to us.
Do you have any advice for consumers, for patients, for the general public in terms of advocating for themselves around the issue of medication?
Well, I think learning to talk to your doctor and insist on having an explanation of the medication that you're being given and a real look at what other medications are on the list. If you insist on your doctor doing it, I think it happens. But if you just accept whatever your doctor says passively, then mistakes can happen. Attaching yourself to one pharmacist and speaking up to your doctor are two very important things people can do for themselves.
What special interests or needs do seniors have that are not met?
Well, I wouldn't say there are any special interests that seniors have. We share the interest of everybody in getting generic drugs to the market as soon as possible, and that is a very big concern of ours. We advocate on that question probably more than any other drug-related question.
What about access to information on prescription medication?
Well, everybody can have that access if they are able to understand it. When you get a new prescription, you get a sheet that comes from the manufacturer telling you all about what the drug is supposed to do, what the possible side effects are, when you should report to your doctor about a side effect, and so on. But everybody does not read those, and everybody isn't able to understand them. They're not written in a user-friendly language. They're very technical. It'd be better to ask your doctor to explain rather than depending on that.
Do you find in your own experience that your doctor explains everything to you?
Yes, because I demand it. But I have friends who have a very hard time getting information from their doctors.
Do you think there's some element in the culture that makes older people think that they have to be sick as they get older?
Well, that's there, of course, although a lot of us resent that assumption that because you're older, you must have something wrong with you. A lot of us are feeling pretty good. And we read about all the demands that the seniors are making on the healthcare system, and we wonder where all this is going. Because actually, the facts are that it's only in the last couple of months of life that people really depend a lot on the healthcare system. And that is maybe unfortunate, but probably unavoidable, that in the last couple of months you're going to be expensive. We need better information on the outcomes of all these drugs that are being prescribed to us. And that should be available through drug benefit plans and through pharmacist records and in other ways. And it should be used so that they can say, okay, we know there's so much of this medicine being prescribed, and we can see that as a result there are less seniors arriving in hospital.
The drug that worries you most is the drug that supposedly prevents osteoporosis.
Mainly because it's given so widely, and also because even midlife women are sold on hormone replacement therapy by being frightened by osteoporosis. That's one of the ways they've talked them into hormone replacement therapy, which may or may not have been a good idea.
So it's not only the outcomes of medications, but the necessity in the first place for medication that concerns you.
If you know the outcomes, then you know whether it was a good idea to be giving these drugs or not. If you know that there are actually less fractures now, then okay, it was right to keep pushing women into taking these drugs. I think people get intimidated by the pain, the aches and pains of osteoarthritis, which plagues most seniors. And some people feel like, oh, it hurts, I can't move. And other people feel like, well, when I move around more, it doesn't hurt so much. But if you don't try it, you can sit there and say, oh, it hurts so much, I can't get up.
Osteoarthritis and osteoporosis are two different problems.
They're two different problems, but they're both extremely prevalent.
Okay, but one of them, I think, is actually detectable and actually occurs, and the other one is may or may not be a pipe dream that people are just frightening you with in order to get you to take pills.
You mean osteoporosis pills?
Yes, osteoporosis pills.
They do bone scans before they prescribe it for you, but I don't know whether they've lowered the bar on what's a dangerous level of bone deterioration. I think they must have. I can remember when they said one out of four women over 65 was going to get osteoporosis, and now it's more like four out of five. So something has changed, and I don't think it's women's bones.
You'd like to know where they get their numbers.
I'd like to know whether they have lowered the level at which they consider deterioration dangerous, because of course you're degenerating as you get older. That's part of the process. But the degree of degeneration that's considered dangerous, I don't know whether they've lowered that or not. I think they have.
Besides, not everybody breaks bones.
Even, that's right. I mean, fall prevention is equally important to avoiding fractures.
Yeah, so I think fractures are a major concern, particularly in this climate. It's so difficult to move around.
A lot of seniors don't go out in icy weather because they're afraid of falling, and they become housebound in bad weather.
And you read about people's health deteriorating after a fracture.
Oh, yes. The immobility for a long period of time does reduce your resilience.
I can't help wondering if when the pharmaceutical companies lobbied you, whether you took the opportunity to tell them what you think of their campaigns.
Oh, yes, but it doesn't influence them in any way. They're influenced by money. They don't care what we think about it.
Was there any comment you had on Health Canada as a partner in advocacy?
I, for one, am very disturbed that they and their drug safety regulations are much too inclined to take the drug company's word for the safety of the drug. They want to save money on doing their own research by accepting the research that's been done by the pharmaceutical companies. Patent law particularly, I think, is something that everybody should be going after them for.
I think you made your point about generic drugs that take much longer to get on the market.
That's why we're opposed to these long patents.
Ethel Mead spoke to us from her home in Toronto. For the Ontario Coalition of Senior Citizens Organizations, just go to any good search engine and type in OCSCO. That's OCSCO for the Ontario Coalition of Senior Citizens Organizations. The Older Women's Network Online Action Center is at www.olderwomensnetwork.org. That's www.olderwomensnetwork.org.
And if you are experiencing adverse reactions to a prescription drug or would like to link up with other Canadian prescription drug consumers, contact PharmaWatch at the following email address: PharmaWatch@PharmaWatch.net. That's PharmaWatch@PharmaWatch.net. Next week, Farmed and Dangerous continues our look at consumer rights in the area of prescription drugs with two longtime advocates on the national scene. Wendy Armstrong of the Alberta chapter of the Canadian Consumers Association remembers when government-funded regulatory agencies protected our health from the depredations of Big Pharma. She tells how those agencies disappeared and what consumers can do about it. And with 12% of Canadians lacking any type of drug coverage and prescription drugs eating up 15 cents and counting of our healthcare dollar, Dr. Gordon Guyot of the Medical Reform Group will tell us why he thinks now is the time to push for a national pharmacare program in Canada. Our sincere thanks to John Kinloch of Project Genesis, Phil Nolan of the NDG Community Coalition on Healthcare, and to Ethel Mead of the Ontario Coalition of Senior Citizens Organizations.
Farmed and Dangerous is produced by the Community News Collective at CKUT Radio McGill as part of its award-winning long-term memory radio series. Our thanks to all of those who make educational and inspirational radio here at CKUT possible. Stay tuned for long-term memory radio each and every Wednesday at 5 p.m. on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on Real Audio on the World Wide Web at www.ckut.ca. This 10-part Farmed and Dangerous series is available in a set of CDs from Radio McGill. For more information, please give us a call at area code 514-398-6788 or visit our website at www.ckut.ca and click on Community News. This is Long-Term Memory Radio.